awful lot about her in some way, and absolutely nothing about her in other ways. And as I'm not writing a biography, I'm actually looking for things that are probably part of your family knowledge, even if not part of yours.
Yeah.
I mean, one of them is, I don't know whether you people ever went to Swaziland during the emergency.
We did, yeah.
Three girls.
Yes. Yeah. We were there for what must have been 2 terms of schooling, however long that is, 5 or 6 months. I mean, I went to school there. In fact, what I remember about Swaziland is being woken up in the middle of the night and Ruth had dyed her hair red, which is my most outstanding memory.
Why?
To avoid... I mean, it's a child's memory, but I don't know whether this is what I assumed or whether in fact was true, was to avoid... Because we were left in the middle of the night. I mean, it was a form of disguise.
What did it feel like? I mean, you were 8, eh?
7 or 8.
Do you remember anything about that, apart from the red hair?
I remember the stop-off, actually. I mean, I remember stopping at some people's house. I can't actually remember who they are. And, I mean, I don't know if I have very relevant memories, though. You know, I remember... And I basically remember going to school there. I remember being in an apartment block. And Ruth disappeared for a certain amount of time as well at that time. And I don't actually know where she was, because I've... You know, I just... That's what I remember.
Because Tilly was with you then, or not?
No.
You looked after
No.
Her.
We stayed, we were, I can't actually remember who it is, but I'm sure I could remember, and I'll let you know. We stayed with another couple, and, you know, I remember things like she washed our face with soap and water, you know, which is a very traumatic experience.
Why? Didn't you normally wash
I think it was, no, I think it was something to do with Ruth not being around, but the way I remember it is this, you know, it's like a bit of a boarding school memory, is she just, you know... Yeah. Treated me in a way that Ruth didn't. I mean, there was some difference, but all I remember is the soap. Mm.
Was it quite tense or was it fun?
God, who knows? I think it was always a mixture. Mm. You know, it was tense and it was fun. I'm not sure when I look back on my childhood in South Africa. On one level, I thought it was fun and exhilarating. On the other level, it was very frightening. I never, you know, none of us, I think, ever knew what was going on. And that became a kind of fun, but I don't think it was a very real type of fun, no.
I asked that because my kids went through the same thing in the 80s. And it got me wondering about the activists' kids in the 1950s. It must have had a bloody hard time.
Yeah. I think so, which I think wasn't expressed at the time and was subsequently expressed, you know, in young adulthood. Which was, I think it was very fearful and a huge amount of insecurity. I don't know, I think parents in the 80s have operate from different sets of information from parents in the 50s, though. I mean, I just think there's a general level of awareness about communication and children, and but was non-existent in the 50s, which is it was better not to ever tell children anything. So...
I mean, Tilly was a lot of who brought you up as well, didn't she? Quite a scary lady. I mean, I talked to Tilly when she was 91 and she nailed me to the wall.
She was a scary... She is scary. I mean, she's a very controlled, I think is the word. Extremely controlled woman. And rather an unfulfilled woman. Mm. You know, and I think with a wonderful mind... who actually never achieved what she wanted to achieve and watched her daughter do it. And I think had a real anger about having to look after Ruth's kids while Ruth was, which I think is justified, actually, but didn't have, I mean, they somehow didn't have the channels of communication to say, look, I'm not doing this. And kind of hugely proud, Tilly, in the wrong. I mean, I don't think that's a great thing to be. I know that people say in admiration of Tilly, she was so proud, she was so strong, and I think it didn't, it added to her cost.
Mm. To what extent do you think Ruth was driven by a need to fulfill Tilly's hopes or whatever. I mean, what I'm thinking really is Tilly must have been a very hard act to follow.
I don't think they had a great relationship. And I'm not sure, actually. And the problem is that it's something I would have liked to have talked to Tilly about in recent years. And she's... But I can't, yeah. You see, I'm really not sure what kind of relationship they had when Ruth was a young... When Ruth was young. I know what adult relationship they had, but actually that doesn't provide the whole picture.
I have a bit of that from friends who knew Ruth. I found quite a few friends who went to the Jewish government school in Doornfontein with her. So, you know, I'll give you the chapter to have a look at. I don't know. Yeah, please.
I mean, I know they share some things in common, is this business about not, you know, they don't suffer so-called fools easily.
Everybody
very impatient, both of them.
Mm.
You know. But I never actually saw them having much of a dialogue, which is the problem. You know, so whatever Ruth took from Tilly, she did without Tilly's cooperation, clearly.
Mm. Yeah. The main thing I really wanted to ask you was about that period from... the time of coming back, and also about coming back from Swaziland, if you remember, or remember anybody talking about that, up until when you left the country. Do you have any memories about that? It's a very hidden period. Everybody was working underground, under pressure.
I'm trying to remember. I don't know that... I mean, it may be a better idea to talk to Sean because she was older, because I'm not sure where my memories belong. I mean, I remember Swaziland quite vividly as a separate era, and I remember the run-up and the period just prior to leaving. I mean, I could have a think about it, that's what I could certainly do. And if I... No, seriously, because I'm not sure that I could spend 20 minutes trying to locate where, you know, where which memories belong.
Do you remember the run-up just to, before leaving? I mean, Ruth being detained. And
yeah,
sure,
yeah.
People
very
asked
clearly.
You that before.
Very clearly. Not many, actually. I'm this hidden member of the family. Am I not?
Why is that?
Because I am.
Because you're the youngest.
I don't think so, actually. I think because I really am a prodigal. I mean, I really disappeared from the family circle for a very, very long time. You know, a period of about 20 years. I was just, you know, somewhere else, so...
It's hardly surprising, given that family.
I mean, I remember just all in a jump, I mean, from the period that... I mean, I remember the moment of, you know, the actual day that she was detained, and I remember... visiting her in prison, which I'm sure is all very well documented, though. I mean, I'm sure you've got lots on
only
that.
Only from a fact point of view, not from a feeling point of view.
Well, I had a very... I mean, the one thing I can tell you is I had a very interesting conversation with Ruth about 2 months before she died. And I asked her, because she appeared to be so in control during that period.
During the detention period?
During the detention. I mean, she clearly wasn't. I mean, I subsequently found out, you know, she was... attempted suicide, for one, and also felt that she'd given information that she shouldn't. I mean, she was not, did not feel in control. And I asked her, because I think a lot of residual anger that I no longer have about, you know, where I fitted in with all that. And I said to her, were you frightened? You know, I mean, it kind of sounds obvious to me that she would say, yes, of course I was frightened, but at the time it wasn't. And I asked her, and this is 82, was she scared, you know, and did she miss us? Did she miss me? And she just sort of looked at me as if to say, you know, of course. And I said to her, why didn't you say that? You know, why when we came to visit you, didn't you say, I miss you? And she said because she couldn't allow herself to verbalise it, because she felt that if she had verbalised one small piece of being frightened... or of missing her family, or of feeling scared that she may never see us again, she would have felt engulfed by it.
Mm.
And that's a very vivid, you know, that was quite an important conversation to have with Ruth, because she didn't say that kind of thing very often. And maybe it's because nobody actually ever asked her either. Mm. You know, it's forbidden territory.
And of course, everybody expected her to be in control. That was, I think, a very terrifying thing, because I think that she was a very shy person underneath, is the sense I get. It must have been hard to keep that front going.
I don't know whether she was shy. I think she suffered from inadequacy, like every human being on the face of this earth, basically. And in certain situations, she was to me, actually, vividly, Ruth hated feeling inadequate and hated being humiliated. I mean, she hated the possibility that anybody may laugh at her. I mean, I think that was a very big problem.
Why was that?
I suppose it's to do with her family and Tilly. Tilly's very similar. I mean, she was very, very serious, Ruth. I'm not sure why it was. I'm not sure, but I don't know. Maybe, you know, that is a family perspective and I think a public perspective. It's part of Ruth's articulation and her wit and her way of expressing herself and her way of actually disposing of people or embracing them verbally allowed nobody any room to doubt her, and it was all this, you know, foil and fencing, and and I think, you know, she didn't like to be laughed at. She didn't like to make mistakes. And I know this is a bit of a veering off the subject, but I think that is to do with, you know, being vulnerable and human and as big, which is a Tilly thing. You know, that it was not clearly allowed. Tilly has never allowed it, and it was clearly not allowed when Ruth was a child.
Look, there's just a couple more questions, but this guy is called... Would you mind...
I mean, I didn't mean to indicate that Ruth didn't have a sense of humour, but she liked to be on the...
Yeah.
I think also she needed to feel very comfortable to be able to drop her guard and laugh and giggle. And I mean, I think some of the stuff that Ronald said last night about gossiping was absolutely true. But on the whole, I think she was very afraid of making a mistake and appearing foolish.
That's an insecurity, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an insecurity. She was insecure. You know, but I don't know why it's such a revelation, actually, because who isn't, if you know what I mean? It's kind of a thing to realise that Ruth was a human being. I mean, she was quite a remarkable woman, but...
No, I'm not surprised that she was shy. I just think that it must have been awfully hard to have the pressure of that family behind you and then have to succeed for that family in a way and for the whole movement in many ways.
Mm.
It must have been very hard because you always... There's a public space that you're in all the time.
You know, in some respects, I think... Because I think this is maybe stuff that people... I think Ruth was quite gauche, actually. I think that... Right, I wouldn't use the word shy. I don't think... I know lots of people. I think she was quite gauche that in certain... Like when she arrived, when her period in England, she felt like a colonial. You know, she felt like she didn't have the right culture and that she didn't have the right accent. And she was quite a snob, in fact, Ruth. I mean, she did like... You know, she all that stuff about Italian shoes and Italian food, on the one hand, was a real passion... But also was, on the other hand, I think, was about not being a colonial, was about being a European, which is very Tilly, actually, as well. And she could be awkward. She could feel awkward, Ruth, there's no doubt about it.
She was described by some people in her school years as a real blue stocking.
Yeah.
Very gauche.
Yeah.
And up there in the head, but socially a little kind of wonky.
Yeah.
Didn't she have a thyroid problem?
She did, yeah. No, all her life she had a thyroid problem.
What was the effect of that?
The thyroid problem actually caused her to sleep and be energyless, and she blew up. But that, actually, I mean, I never saw her like that. That, in fact, Jo was talking about it yesterday, that she went to, I think, to Czechoslovakia with Harold Wolpe and came back like a, you know, balloon. And that's when she discovered she had a thyroid problem. But she took thyroxine, and it has occurred to me that maybe she was slightly overprescribed because she slept for 3-4 hours at a time. She would catnap.
Yeah.
No, she could catnap. I mean, she could fall asleep for 20 minutes and get up and work for 4 hours at a stretch, you know, and then she slept quite short periods of time, and it was very, very noticeable. And, I mean, my memory of her is going to sleep with a typewriter going all night, you know, going to sleep with it going, waking up with it going. She didn't sleep a great deal. She slept very, very lightly, and you just had to walk past Ruth's room and you could hear her voice. She kind of half slept, just like when she was dozing on the couch. I always had the impression that's how she was in bed. She was never, like, completely out.
So that was could have been a medication problem?
Quite possibly.
Yeah. Just tell me a little bit, because I'm sure you want to go and listen, but really what I'm interested in is your memories about just before you left South Africa. They must have been rather intense, an intense time.
Of my memories of Ruth?
Well, of the situation too, of you, I mean.
Well, I mean, my memories were I was extremely distressed during that whole period, and I think very, very frightened. I mean, I don't know what perspective. I don't know whether you want me to talk about my memories of Ruth, my memories of the family, or what are you more interested in?
Of the environment and social space of that period.
We were
not only Ruth.
I think one of the biggest, largest memory was a complete feeling of isolation as a family. I mean, us three kids and Tilly, and there was a couple of people, you know, Barney being one of them, and Moira, who's now Moira Fajaz, being another, who we actually had contact with. But there was this whole period up to, during, and post Ruth's arrest, which was, I suppose, I mean, was like feeling like we were social outcasts. I mean, I don't remember feeling like, I mean, we just stopped fitting in at that point. We were very public. It was kind of like walking into an environment and feeling like everybody was talking or looking or pointing, or people were very, I think there was a whole knock-on effect of fear around us. So my memory of being at school was a wide berth all around me of kids who actually either were responding to something their parents had said, who were frightened and angry and quite spiteful. But there was just this kind of, you know, whole vacuum around us.
The family had become a sort of social pariah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And
that must have been very hard to be at school with. And
it was hard.
I didn't really know.
I didn't know. I was just very angry about it. Extremely angry. I mean, I was a very disruptive child, so, you know, I punched my hand through window. I mean, I really got to... That's in that period. One of my most vivid memories of Ruth being a prisoner is punching my fist through a window at school.
While she was in prison?
Well, yeah.
Why was that? I mean, because... Was it at somebody or just...
No. No, and I got punished for it, you know, and I got stood out in the backyard, which is, you know, and also Gillian, who was in another classroom, remembers hearing the sound of breaking glass and says to this day that she knew that that must be me. I mean, I spent a lot of time standing in the courtyard, you know, outside the classroom.
And the school had no perception of that there might be a problem elsewhere.
They never talked to me about it. They did, they knew. I mean, it was fully recognised, people knew. But nobody ever discussed that with me. Nobody ever said, you know, was I okay, or how was Ruth, or had I seen my mother lately, or... And my memory of Ruth actually coming out of prison was, I think, of massive disappointment. She looked absolutely terrible. And also, we were sent away, Jill and I.
To where?
We went away on holiday with, what was it? Rika, no... I'd have to check with Jill.
As she came out?
Was away as well.
I mean, as she came out, she was sent away.
Yeah, I think she was given some time to actually get a... I don't think she could manage us at the same time.
Because the photograph of her just on release, absolutely. She looked terrible.
She looked terrible. And I think she was very... I couldn't recognise her. These are very... Because I have this absolute joy. See, my memory, she came out for my birthday. I mean, it was all for me, you know.
Of course.
This was my biggest fear, that she wasn't going to be, that she didn't love, why wasn't she there for my birthday? No, she actually came, was around for my birthday. Now, that memory, which was my memory at the time, has subsequently given way to a whole lot of other memories, which is just being horrified at the state of her and the fact that she seemed to have lost power, and she was like insubstantial. There was something I couldn't. And that we were sent away.
And she just recovered with Bonnie.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he put her back together.
Yeah.
As much as he could.
Have you spoken to him?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And then do you remember about actually leaving?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was, from my perspective, I was absolutely delighted.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get out of here as quickly as possible. I felt like I didn't have any friends, which I didn't. I mean, the other memory is that they gave me this sort of Zulu doll as my present, and I smashed it on the way home. I mean, I just...
The school gave you a Zulu
doll? Yeah, my classmates gave me a Zulu dolly.
Pretty cathartic sort of ending.
I mean, I was just, you know, I had just huge relief. I was looking forward very much to leaving, and... I can remember the excitement of Tilly making Jill and I these matching check brown check outfits. We arrived in these most ridiculous outfits, Tilly and I. Pleated brown and black check shirts with what you call jerkins, which is a word that always reminds me of my granny.
I've seen a photograph of
them. Yes. And they were, in fact, very itchy material, but they were lined.
Mm.
And it was just this waiting. I think the run-up to leaving was going into Tilly and checking how the jerkins and the skirts were coming on. I mean, I just couldn't wait.
You remember packing up?
I just remember the jerkins, actually. I mean, I think I'd lie if I said I remembered packing up, but I just remember this is what was marking time. And the delight, actually, of being with Ruth and getting on the plane. I mean, I remember the plane journey.
And I remember she got her power back by then, in your terms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she had. Yes, because they, I mean, I sort of have a memory of her organising the pack-up and sale of Mendelssohn Road, because as far as I remember, it happened very, very quickly, which was very Ruth. I mean, she could do things. She could do a list, you know, that other people take a week in an afternoon. And that, and I kind of, I don't know, I'm associating that with her packing up and sale. It seemed to happen very, very quickly to me, and I don't actually know how long when she was released to when we arrived in England, but it seemed to me to happen incredibly quickly.
Mm. Do you remember actually getting on the plane? I mean, who saw you off?
No, I remember arriving and I remember stopping off.
Mm.
We had two stop-offs on the way and I remember both of them.
Yeah.
I don't remember who saw us off. I don't even remember
Joe
who drove
there.
Us. Well, the first thing I remember is the TV cameras. You know, we went straight onto ITN News. And he must have been there. I don't remember, you see.
There's a picture of him.
I don't remember him being there.
Yeah.
I mean, probably my most vivid memories are subsequent to that, which is me having my mother in, you know, when we were in Compiègne Gardens. I really, really remember her during that phase. But, and I've probably asked, because that's all I wanted. That's what this whole palaver was about. You know, everything, including her getting released, you know, us getting on the plane.
It's to do with you having your mum
yeah.
to yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I hope she was my hero.
Mm.
And still in, yeah, I mean, still is, but she was the single most important. And it, and was for a very long time, while she was alive still. I mean, I found it, you know, I had to consult with her a lot.
You know, everybody said that you were the one that was closest to her.
Oh, yeah. I was very close to her. And I think that I was very close to her. Not many people ever say that. It's not allowed somehow.
People have said it to me.
Well, not within our family, though. It's not. I mean, I do talk to Gillian about it. I mean, I think I originally was her little girl. That's the original, and that was quite... And I think that changed subsequently when I became... I mean, I was very wild, and I think Ruth was fascinated by it. She was very, very interested, Ruth, in almost everything. And there was something in my experience that, in fact, ended me up in a lot of trouble, but broke the mould within my family as well. And Ruth... And I don't know whether, you know, this is not a judgmental... I mean, I don't know how I judge it, actually, but she... wanted to know what was happening in my world all the time. I mean, we had quite a interesting series, you know, relationship.
Robin, not just last question, because you're getting hot. How accurate is Gillian's book? I mean, she, for instance, in Swaziland, you know, it turns in the book into a kind of fairly steamy chapter. That's not really what I'm asking, but I mean, in terms of a family biography, is it?
I think the best thing that I can say is that it's definitely fictionalized, and it's definitely from Gillian's perspective, which, you know, is a problem I also have with World Apart, is that, but there are moments in that book that made me cry with recognition, and I think that's how it must be taken. I mean, I think there is an emotional accuracy in it. At moments, you know, it's not fully, it's not... I mean, my recognition is probably more in her description of personality sometimes, like some of her description of my grandfather. Mm. You see, I really recognise, and completely brought tears to my eyes. But actually, it's not from my perspective, you see.
Yeah.
So I can't say, I'm sure it's accurate to Gillian's... Mm. But as well, I think Gillian wouldn't deny this. It was a real fictionalisation. It was she wanted to write an accessible book, not to write a biography of the Slovo dynasty.
Yeah, that's a great book, actually.
Yeah.
Was there ever a character, quite apart from the Swaziland incident, that continued to appear in Ruth's life? I can't remember the guy's name, this English wealthy aristocrat in the book that appears from time to time. Who's that?
Well, I think that Gillian's taken a conglomerate. I mean, I don't know I don't think it's any secret.
Then.
No, I mean, you could ask her. I think... Are you asking if there were men in Ruth's life?
I'm talking about the emotional support that somebody like that offered her over that period. That's really what I'm asking. Not whether she had an affair with him or anything. That's not.
She had
a
number of men, I think. I mean, she did have a number of affairs. She also had a series of very strong friendships, bonds. I mean, Cecil, I don't know.
Cecil Williams.
That's right, was an early one. I mean, Ronald subsequently became one. And in fact, there's a lot of similarity between those two's expression of themselves. Barney, for a long, long time, was of enormous support. And I think probably that figure in Swaziland is a conglomerate. Mm. And I think that's separate to the affairs. I mean, Ruth was very sexual and very promiscuous and had this whole kind of... I mean, you know, when people talk about, you know, how kind of abrasive... and kind of cutting she could be in public, and subsequently how inadequate and how shy and how much she feared humiliation, there's a whole other side which is this very passionate woman as well.
Yeah.
I don't think that... I think it would be inaccurate to say there was one person. I think there were a number.
It's tempting, but... and it's got nothing to do with what I'm writing, to look at your grandfather, who was a wonderful guy, but very absent. And I've often wondered whether her searching for that strong male support could not perhaps be looking for, you know, the kind of support she might have wanted from her father to balance up her family from a very powerful till in a rather absent Julius.
Yeah, well, you know, being the daughter of... I mean, I think that's a strong possibility. I mean, I think because us three daughters I mean, in the early years, Ruth was really the most central figure of our family. I mean, I think, you know, my relationship with Joe now is completely differently, and I see him in his own right. But in fact, Ruth didn't allow Joe a lot of room and was quite, you know, squashed him. Mm. You know, which is extraordinary when I look at who Joe is. And I think our inheritance from having a strong mother is to do quite similar things. And I think it is about Tilly and Julius. You know, and also that she had this kind of... It was odd. She was a blue stocking. I mean, I do really agree with that. You know, she wasn't a feminist in the real sense of the word, as we understand... I mean, as I understand that. And she kind of combined this... She was very, very competitive with men, and she kind of had a distaste. She was very critical about how useless men were all the time, which is actually Tilly as well. And yet she had this whole secret... know, sexual life, which she craved, which she needed. I mean, she was very conscious about getting old. She was terribly vain. I don't mean that as a criticism. It was very important what she looked like. And that clearly stems from Tilly. You know, and probably from, you know, Julius. That there are similarities between Joe and Julius. Yes. Very strong similarities. They had no concern with what belongs to anybody. I mean, they have the same enormous generosity when it comes to possessions and money that actually is very, very rare. It's really not an issue. It's not an act of generosity. I mean, they're kind of essential socialists in that if you've got more than somebody else within the family or without the family, it's without question to be given. And both Julius and Joe are exactly the same in that sense. You know, that's kind of incomprehension why it should be any kind of issue. They are similar.
Have you ever read Ishmael Mir? So she married Joe on the rebound, but he was there to support her.
I've seen pictures of him.
He's very, he's witty, he's politically very astute, he's very good looking.
So Ruth liked a good looking man.
I mean, people have said to me they were finest looking couple together, but it's...
So, how soon after did Ruth marry Joe? What happened to him?
Well, he married Fatima.
Just, and I didn't realize that other people weren't, you know, my sisters maybe weren't aware at the time, because I've subsequently spoken quite a lot to Gillian about this. But I think I knew very little pre-Joe, and in fact never knew very much about Joe till Ruth died.
I think she would have kept Ishmael. I think it was a very painful process. She was devastated after the relationship broke, absolutely devastated. I mean, I from very close friends, I know she was really in pieces.
We've got a picture of him in our photo in our family album, you know, and I do remember, and maybe this is why I remember it so clearly, because when you said he was very good looking, I thought, I know exactly who it is. I've never met him. And when you said his name, I wasn't sure who he was, but there is a photograph in our family album, this is from South Africa. I remember saying, it's a picture of Ruth and him standing on the beach together, and I remember saying, who is that? And Ruth saying, that was an old boyfriend of mine, but for some reason I have never forgotten her saying that, and it must have been, you know, it's now that I realise who that, I've always wondered who that was.
Soft spot for life. He was a beautiful man. And he would go and expose things, and Ruth would come in with him or behind him and actually put in the press. The Bethel thing was Michael Scott's. The Southwest Africa issue was Michael Scott. And he was central to that whole process. It's an unwritten chapter of history. The effect of Michael Scott on the Congress Alliance, on bringing people like Ruth and Mandela and Ishmael to a kind of space where there was peace, harmony, and forward-looking rather than antagonism. And when the Youth League, ANC Youth League, was very antagonistic to the Communist Party in the late 40s, the consulted the bringing of it together, it was reconstructed on the old friendships that had been created in Ishmael's flat. And that's how they got together. There were political reasons, and, you know, to be a good materialist, you have to only look at those. But really, the truth was the personalities that recrafted that lives. Gillian, I'm worried about the
When I arrived here, I'll tell you, listen to this, when I arrived here with Sean, because I am the missing member of the family, publicly, I mean, I don't mean amongst, but when I arrived here, we were presented with these two, we picked up for the symposium for the airport, we were each presented with a file. And Sean said, Sean Slab, and Mara said, Gillian Slab.
You meant to live with us.
I have, I say something. I have learned to live, but I don't accept it. I'm used to accept it more easily than I do, actually. I now say, excuse me, I'm not Gillian, I'm Robin, so that they remember next time. So, I mean, it doesn't send me off into any wild distress, but I do notice it. I understand it.
I'm worried about you getting hot and missing me.
I'm fine. I mean, maybe if you want to tell me, I mean, if you've I'm absolutely fine. I don't want to. I mean, I was just going to say, which I then suppose is for everybody, it's just really, it's
that it made me feel very sad when you were talking about Ishmael, because I think that is a part of Ruth. I mean, that I know that. I don't know the details of it, but I do, you know, I know about who, you know, I'm not expressing myself very well.
But you know there's a space that you don't know about.
Yeah, and I know there was some kind of grief that I don't know about, and I know there was some real craving for a relationship, a long-term relationship that Ruth never either accepted or felt she had, which I know motivated her as well, because I,
she could never have fulfilled that, you see. I mean, that she could come to terms with it, but not fulfill it. I think that's the problem with that kind of relationship, I guess. It's crude to say she was looking for Julius. But it is interesting how she needed the support of men.
Oh yeah, and it's in kind of infinitely interesting to me. I mean, I'm always, I suppose because she was my role model, she influenced me so much, but I'm always kind of looking, just making new discoveries or adding something else to that layer of Ruth and her support network of men, and how she needed so much to belong to a man's world. And yet was such an infinitely strong woman. You know,
she changed when she went to Mozambique. She
changed radically. And I hope you've spoken to Bridget.
I haven't.
I'm only
writing up lots of new people left. But interesting, I don't think, this is just me feeling, but I don't think that her change was to do with Mozambique only. It was to do
with
having...
Women. Sorry.
I think it was having written Ola Schreiner also.
I was going to say, that's what I said, it was to do with women.
Yeah, she came to terms with her own masculinity, actually. I mean, if you look at how she characterizes Ola, she characterizes her as having to be a man because she could never fulfill that space in her which was the man she could never find. And I thought, you know, that's not Ola Schreiner she's talking about.
Herself, and I tell you, I vividly, vividly remember her writing that book more than any of the other books. It was the most difficult book she ever wrote for her, and I read every chapter as it was written, and she was so insecure about being, and it was because it was so close to the bone.
Yeah. She wrote two great books. One was 170
The other was Ola Schreiner. I'm glad you said
that.
The
others were journalism,
so too.
But that one came from the center of her being.
I vividly remember that. Yeah, it did. It did. And she would do things that she very rarely did. She would come from her study up to my bedroom and read me a paragraph. And I'd go and I'd make a comment or not make a comment. And she would read it again to, you know...
I needed to be right.
Yeah, very deeply. And she... And also because she worked collaboratively with a woman, which she found... Another woman, which she found really difficult. And it was definitely... I think I agree. It was a turning point. And I think it was also very linked to what subsequently happened between her and Bridget, which I think was of major importance.
A friendship? I don't know.
It was a very strong friendship. I think it was Ruth's first equal friendship with a woman. She had very powerful friendships, say, with Moira, but that was very different. I mean, Ruth, it was like, externally, Ruth looked like she was the, you know, the centre of that relationship, the support of it, whereas, and Moira was, if you got close enough, was actually giving her support, but not in a surface way. I mean, it obviously worked both ways. But I think in Bridget, Ruth first of all met a modern American woman, you know, with a real sense of herself, and who knew about, I think, things that Ruth didn't know about, and who was, Bridget, I think, was probably, Ruth considered to be her intellectual equal.
What's Bridget's surname?
She's here. I'll introduce you. She's really worth talking to. I mean, that's when Ruth stopped, you know, rolling her hair and started to... she really changed. And I know because she wrote about Bridget in letters. I destroyed all the letters that Ruth wrote me, you know. I'll regret for the rest of my life. No, I know. It really is one of the greatest regrets. I don't have that many regrets, that, you know. time is what it is, all that, but that really, and she wrote letters which were about her excitement about her friendship with Bridget. You know, I think she felt like she didn't have to think all the time.
Yeah.
That she could put in an idea and Bridget would then run with it, or Bridget may put in an idea. And I think it changed, and also because Bridget was from America and had... I said it, actually, I was just about to repeat what I said earlier. But I think that was very major for Ruth.
Yeah. She didn't have to be in control as Bridget.
No, not at all. And it's very... I will introduce... It's so worth talking to Bridget. Even if it is the wrong period, I think Bridget may know things about Ruth that nobody else knows, actually. Even of Ruth's history, because Ruth and her became... And it was such a new, exciting... It was the only friendship Ruth had like that. Ever, I think. And I can't think of any other women who had... Maybe that's a rash thing to say, but I can't.
Moira is often cited as the great friend that she had.
Moira was kind of the secret keeper, though. I mean, Moira... You know, I was also very, very close to Moira because Moira became my surrogate. I mean, when you say Tilly looked after us in South Africa, actually Moira looked after me. I spent all my time with Moira in that run-up during the period of Ruth being in prison and just before leaving England. I mean, it's Moira I remember. And I think Moira... was Ruth's kind of go-between. I mean, she really was. You know, she knew about all the romantic liaisons and Ruth's worries about, you know, whether her eyebrows were plucked adequately and, you know, whether she looked okay with her stuff, you know, all that stuff. But I think there was a level on which they didn't have a relationship like Bridget. No. And that Ruth was a guide for Moira. I don't think Moira was a guide for Ruth. She was... Ruth, I mean, I'm not underestimating Moira's contribution.
Mm.
I mean, I think she was a friend, you know, on levels that other people couldn't fulfill, but...
Yeah, I mean, Hilary Cooley was another friend.
Yeah. But that was... I don't know about these friendships, actually. I really don't. You
You're
know,
getting
I,
hurt.
No, I'm not.
Today.
When they call the prison in Tanzania, the ANC prison, the Roosevelt
any movement which it has become associated with. Well, that's now gone. The money is cut off. The star seed is gone, at least as far as we know. But what has happened has been that inside the Communist Party here, there are deep divisions. They don't know when to support the coup or not. At the branch meetings, they are split down the middle. And in the one branch meeting I heard of, in Cape Town, I won't mention the area because it might give the name away, the chairperson said to the two debating sides, I hear what you say, but I'll do what I'm told to do. So in other words, it's not even a basic democracy in service movement which claims that it has democratized. I get this from a member of the Communist Party, I think it's reputable, but of course it's anecdotal, and I haven't got anything on paper because I'll never go on paper. Going to happen in the next year or two is on top of the problem we face.